It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimera's Comics. Chimera's is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic Chimera's Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. Once again, I am your host, John Clark, and with me, as always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And today we have Craig Bass, co-owner of Motion Source and independent filmmaker.
Hello, everybody.
See, perfect.
Yeah,
he didn't want to wear headphones, and he did it perfectly.
Yeah, look at that. Doesn't need the monitor himself or nothing.
We set a goalpost that now you have to live up to for the next hour.
I can
no
do it.
More headphones for anybody else on the show.
I just pivot my head around a central point.
You look like a pigeon, you know, bobbing your head, you know.
Oh, we should do that on video then.
Oh, there we go.
I'm going to do that the whole hour. We need to see that.
I just do as I'm told. So
that's right. You're doing good at that. Yeah.
We are actually drinking Starbucks iced coffee with like ice in it. This is the first.
Yeah.
It's not a Frappuccino.
Craig's not a coffee drinker, so he's got this. What is this stuff?
Oh, this is the Nectar of the Gods, LaCroix.
If anyone,
are you familiar with this, John?
Does it have caffeine in it?
No, it has nothing in it. It's sparkling.
John doesn't know nothing about it.
He's completely decaffeinated.
I am completely decaffeinated.
And
this
for
is,
how many years have you been decaffeinated?
Probably about 4 years. I did have a little breakdown with Diet Coke when I was working on like web series.
Yeah.
And everybody there was obsessed with Diet Coke, drank Diet Coke, and we would run really long hours. So there was a point where I kind of fell into that trap.
All right, here's interesting.
It was short.
If you guys are filming, a filming day, typically, I don't know anything about film, but it takes a minute to make a movie. So you guys are filming. If you're filming till like 3 or 4 in the morning, which I know you've done, what do you do to stay awake?
Just keep going.
You just keep going.
Yeah, I don't.
Everyone else is like downing coffees, and you're just like, I'm good.
Yeah, it's hard to. I mean, there's so much activity. It's like, what do you, you know?
Yeah, I guess it's true. You don't really have like wind down time. You're always.
No, you're not really sitting around. I mean, at least in the indie, at least in the indie sphere.
If you're an extra, though, you do a lot of sitting around.
Yeah.
And you know, I did have to be an extra in one of our own scenes because my partner. I'm supposed to say business partner because partner sounds a little. Sketchy.
Yeah, but I don't know.
My partner John. My business
he's
partner.
He's a good man.
He's a good man.
My business partner John Scaletta wanted me, and he's co-directing a film that we're doing right now. Wanted everybody to be in the film if possible, like in the background as an extra, and you're in the film.
I am.
You're in the film, and I sat in the background, and I only had to sit there for like 7 takes, you know, because it was just a certain angle, and I was like, oh my god, this is boring. Just before that, I had made 40 people. Sit in a cafe for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And they weren't really allowed to talk.
You can't really talk.
Now you can empathize.
I can, but...
A little bit.
I just feel like, you know what? They should be so grateful and excited that they're being, you know, get to be
you
part
know what?
Of a film.
That's
that
it should be, yeah. I feel like... I think it's really interesting, like, making movies, doing the podcast, all these other things are, like, creative and they're interesting, and I really like that stuff. So it's like, when you guys call and you're like, hey, we need warm bodies to sit in a coffee and pretend to talk to somebody. I'm like, yeah, all right. Yeah. I'll do it.
I was in one independent film in college, and we shot from like 11 to like 4 because it was a nighttime scene. And they said, well, you're playing a homeless guy and a guy's beating you up. And I said, oh, well, I got an idea. How about you bounce me off that box spring that's on there, and then I land on the floor, and they're like, that's great, you're going to be a star. And then we did 25 takes of it.
Yeah.
And I was like 19 at the time. My hands were all raw even, and I was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
I don't
want to
act anymore.
See, that's because
this was my idea.
That's because you comic guys are all into special effects and stunts.
We are. To me, that'd be the dream is like a stunt man, like to just like do all that cool stuff. You get to see you're like...
Really?
That would have been awesome.
You admitted to me the other day you're a bit of an adrenaline junkie. So
I'm
the complete opposite. This room right here, I could spend my life here. You know, just if I had my stuff in here.
Yeah,
I'm kind of a homie.
You do. Well, see, that's the thing is, like, I'll be very mellow 1 minute. Like, I'm very laid back. I don't get like really. I don't worry about anything. I don't get like worked up about anything. But then, like, the second like Dave, you know, Redfield is like, hey, let's go do this like big tomato war in Soldier Field. I'm like, sign me up. Let's do it. You know, so it's like, I do want, you know,
you're go along guy.
I'm a go along guy. I'm up for anything.
That's like, not necessarily a good quality, you know.
I don't think it's an entirely good quality, but yeah. I wouldn't say it's. I'd rather be doing.
Well,
you
better be keeping pretty honest, trustworthy friends if you're going to be in that position.
Yeah, I've.
You don't want to go along with the wrong.
Yeah,
I've you don't want somebody to call you up and go, "Hey, let's all do heroin."
Yeah, I passed on. I didn't pass on it. I attempted some things.
Heroin?
No, not heroin. Oh my God. Crazy.
I'd have to walk out right now.
I attempted some things that
I would. This would be the best podcast ever.
Well, that's where it's going now.
The basketball diary podcast.
I attempted some things at a party a couple years ago at a crazy apartment I'm going to get to in a minute with another story. And my roommate, she was just like, no, and just like slapped it out of my hand. And she's like, you need to chill. You need to just relax. And it's like, so I do have like, there's a check, but very rarely do I do anything like really crazy.
So this won't be called Heronated Comics.
This won't be called Heronated
Comics. That'd be pretty damn boring, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, that'd be really boring. And people always say, like, you should have an alcohol podcast. I'm like, no, we shouldn't. Because
no, you
within
can't really
10 minutes,
to that.
Everyone is screaming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you'll be talking over everyone and like screaming and hollering. It's like, I don't think that really.
Yeah, and slurring your words.
It's yeah, like, to be derailed.
With caffeine, you get very clipped.
Yeah.
Well, no, but that's the other thing. You know, not only do I not drink caffeine, I don't drink alcohol. So if I hung out with you guys for the. You'd be
like that guy that just is like, why the fuck am I here?
I would, but maybe I'd lead the pack. You know, I just. Maybe I'd translate for the audience everything that.
So you don't drink alcohol, you don't drink caffeine, and you work out in jeans.
But you do have some vices.
Batman.
No, I do have vices.
Yeah, you smoke.
I do smoke, yeah. I have multiple vices. It's not, you know, they're just not, I guess, the standard set.
Yeah,
I do have like a very obsessive, like this stuff that we never really...
LaCroix.
So all it is, so you know, John, is just water carbonated with a little bit of natural flavoring. No calories, no nothing, right?
When I was doing the
extras
that's
all it is.
That they filmed...
I drank half a bottle of rum from St. Croix.
That kind of counts. Not quite. Yeah, this is all the crap they have at the when they do shoots. They have like cases of this crap because he goes.
That's for
like,
me. Yeah,
it's for him. And they're the just like, guys. Well, here you go, and it's awful. Like it's terrible. I don't. You. It's
see,
like
no, I agreed
taste.
With you the first.
I'm
time
I'm not liking
had it.
The design of the can.
It looks pretty bad. That's
really?
Pretty graphic.
Well, it's kind of like it looks like it's out of the early 90s or something. It would sit next to. You guys remember Hypercolor?
It looks like
clothing
a
and stuff. Like it would fit like in the bomb equipment. Like it has that whole.
It looks like a foil cover that Marvel would do in the
90s. It looks terrible graphic design over here. It's awful looking.
Yeah. Well, I've just become now. It's like a symbol of hope and joy to me. So you know,
you put a lot in that can.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You don't get that much out of it.
No. And I hated it when I first had it. My fiance had me try it.
Taste. Oh, she's really into it.
She's not really into it. But she's kind of into it. And she said, "Well, why don't you try this sometime?" Since, you know, I'm not like I got to a point where I wasn't drinking anything but water.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to drink caffeine. I'm not drinking booze. I don't want to drink juices and stuff because like the unnecessary. Like calories.
All right,
and
here's
sugar.
The question. Sorry. So,
no, it's okay.
You're going out of your way to be healthy with all this, the liquids you're putting in your body, but then you smoke cigarettes.
Yeah, which is like the worst.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't know if I'm going out of my way to be healthy with this stuff. It's just there's reasons for it all, you know, and it's not health based reasons.
Not health based reasons.
Right. So, I don't drink caffeine because I don't like, I'll admit, I'm a naturally just anxious person.
Yeah.
So once I start, and the older I get, I feel like the worse it gets.
Wow, we are really opposites. I didn't think we had this much not in common.
Oh, great.
Podcast over.
Podcast. Go home.
I have nothing to say to you.
So you mellow out as you get older?
Yeah. I hit a certain point in my life where I was just like worrying about things just like wasn't, it doesn't solve anything. This is a big thing me and Carm have. Carm will like, the bank account will be like gone.
Yeah.
And then Carm like loses his mind and like freaks out and gets like ulcers. And I'm just like, eh, we'll figure it out.
Well, I guess I'm sort of like a yin and yang with that because I'm very much like that in some situations.
Yeah.
Like you would have said, you know, if I'm broke, it's kind of like, okay, money comes and goes. It'll come again. It's not here right now.
Yeah.
You know?
I am so the opposite of that. Like, when I have money, I'm like, I need to keep this money forever.
Yeah,
really?
Well,
you're
like
a miser.
He work for, you know, he's John freelances for anyone who doesn't know.
Oh,
he's a freelance writer.
And that's what we were going to talk about.
I feel like we've started like 10 different topics here, and then we just jump onto
that's
one.
Usually
is
how
that
works.
A typical?
That's typical.
As long as they're all interesting, they all stay. Okay.
Some of this might get cut out. So anyway, John does freelance, but you have freelance is difficult because you don't know where your next job's coming.
Right.
And well, how many days have you? Well, you went like 90 days on this year without working?
Yeah, I went 90 days this year without working.
And like by like the I don't know what that point, it's how many weeks that is. But I mean, by the third month, John was like bouncing off the walls.
But we're sitting in a pretty nice house here. So does your wife have a very lucrative job? Or
no.
No? Okay.
Well. We cannot afford this house on one income.
All right.
Yeah, that's been John's.
Just move Steve into one of the spare bedrooms.
Yeah.
You'd be close to the store.
It has been discussed.
You'd be close to the store.
That's true. It'd be a lot closer than I am now. It takes me over an hour to get to work because I moved up to Canada.
Yeah, against all our wishes.
Well, against your wishes, but not mine. You know, well, living the dream.
They were apartments here. That was my
mode. There's nothing to do out here, though. I don't know.
You come and you do this podcast.
See, we are diametrically opposed.
And then you drive to the city, which is like 20 minutes away. You're like 20 minutes
nothing
away.
Nothing to do. What's there to do downtown? In this? I mean, what when you say there's nothing to do? I hear that complaint all the time, but what is there to do in the city?
For instance?
If you want to go get drunk at a bar or whatever, you can do that anywhere. You can do it in your house. You can do it at your friend's place. John, apparently you did it last night in the comfort of your own basement. So it's you know,
when all your friends live in the city, that's a big one. And then
friends are overrated, Steve.
I only have a few, so I got to
all betray you. Okay.
I got to do what I can to keep them. You know what? My only explanation for it is firemen live at the firehouse.
Yeah, that doesn't really say
anything.
You know,
that just means, you know, that's says more about living in like the city where I am than I know how to articulate.
No, that sounds like you should live in the comic book store.
It sounds like you should live with a bunch of men.
I can't live. You can't
in a bunkhouse.
You can't crap where you sleep or something, or eat where you shit.
Yeah, but firemen live in the firehouse is the complete opposite of you can't crap where you eat.
Yeah, but I feel like I'm not a comic book owner. I'm a fireman, quote air quote fireman.
Wait, where are you a fireman?
No, air quote. I'm not really a fireman. Air quote like.
You're almost done with that coffee already. It just started.
Are you a fireman if you equate putting out fires with drinking with 20-year-old girls in the city?
Yes.
Well, I understand.
No, that's what I'm saying. Firemen and my brother's a fireman, and they have like no shortage of beautiful, beautiful women chasing them down all the time. It's the, you know what? It's the coolest job.
They're in fantastic shape.
They are.
And they're heroes every day.
Yeah, it's not like a cop. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of people who be like, cops are assholes, cops are jerks.
Cops are corrupt.
Because firemen don't go to your house and set fire to it.
Right. Exactly. They come and put it out. Though, I heard this before, and I talked to my brother about this, and he's really like, that's crazy. Like, people don't really do that. But I've heard this several times from several different people, is that apparently firemen have all this training to do all these, like, awesome things, go into fires and break windows open and all this other stuff, but they don't... That doesn't happen a lot. There's not as many fires as they would like. So apparently,
I believe that.
What's that?
I believe that.
Yeah, exactly. As
many fires as they would like?
Yes. Yes.
Well, everybody likes to stay busy.
Everybody likes a fire.
The time goes by faster.
My brother's a fireman, and he's been a fireman for 3 years. He's been in maybe 6 or 8 fires. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, he sits at the fire station. They do all their like work during the day, and then he spends the rest of the time playing Xbox. Like, he's bored out of his mind so much that he's trying to transfer to busier districts so he has more to do. So they get bored.
So a more flammable district.
Shouldn't he be working out all day?
Flammable district.
To stay ripped? And...
I don't know. I don't know what he does. Okay. All I know is he plays Xbox. He's in great shape. You know, he's got like, you know, shoulders as big as like me, you know? Anyway,
that's
so
disgusting.
He's huge. Well, he's not huge. I mean, he's smaller than everyone in this room but me.
He's in very good shape.
He's in great shape, but he's a little guy. You know what I'm saying? But he could like, you know, beat
the tar out of
balls.
Your brother's physique, so.
Anyway. All right. So.
We are 13 minutes in and we have yet to introduce the topic.
That's where we're getting to it.
This is a record.
We're getting to it. All right. So he's a fireman
and drinking.
Fireman and drinking.
So what are you getting to?
What I'm getting at here is I've heard that some of the older, more less mentally sound firemen will actually go and set.
Old crazy men?
They will go and set fires to like abandoned buildings and stuff so that they have something to do. And my brother's like, no, that's crazy. There's no way that's true. Yeah. But that fire that happened in Chicago was the biggest fire in 10 years.
The Chicago fire?
Not that one. Maybe. I don't know. I wasn't there. But that that was that huge like abandoned warehouse or whatever fire on the southeast
old crazy
side.
Cow that had nothing to do.
I'm going to set fire.
A.K.A.
fireman.
A.K.A. fireman. See, it sounds like a good excuse, right? Apparently that
back
fire
then,
was
back then, cows
set.
Used to be firemen.
Well, think about this. All these like abandoned buildings that like bombs are sleeping in that just like catch fire spontaneously, these huge fires, and then like 48 firemen.
That's why they're called fire traps.
I don't know. I'm just saying. I think there's a bit more going on than that. I think the firemen are setting fires out of boredom.
Fireman conspiracy.
Too many comics, Steve.
I watch too many movies and I read too many comics.
If anything, this is a very rare occurrence that some psycho, you know, over the hill fireman starts a fire in an abandoned building.
You know what I gotta say?
The firebug.
That would be me.
Although it's an interesting plot point.
It's an interesting
movie.
Because
then, you know, here's the thing. He sets the fire, right? And he thinks it's abandoned, but it kills someone. And now he has to live with the guilt of having killed somebody in this, you know,
or
attempt
even
to...
worse, him and his buddy go and his buddy dies in the fire. Like his partner, fireman guy.
And his buddy dies trying to save somebody who also dies. So now he has to live with the guilt. And where do you go with that?
He comes back as a fiery ghost.
Well, that's the comic
version.
And
he tells him where the fire is.
That's the comic
version. What about the real, you know, the human version? Let's talk about the characters.
No. All right. Fiery ghost.
Wait, I want to return to something here because I'm the only non-caffeinated one. So
okay.
I'm going to bring us back.
Hosting now, right?
You guys are guesting on my show.
I let go of.
Can I move in here too? I'll take the room over. You can go to my one-bedroom apartment. And
fine, but there'll be a baby soon.
There'll be a baby and a kid.
They're loud.
All right, so you're going to bring it back, Craig. Where are we going?
Oh, so we're going back to, I cannot stand that people in the city are always like, there's so much to do. There's so much to do. Well, one thing, when you're out here, you're what, 20 minutes max?
You're not fired.
Yes. You get on the metro and you're in there in like 20 minutes.
Two, I mean, most of when people, I feel like most of the time when people are saying there's so much to do, they mean getting drunk.
Yeah, I would say
it's not like they're going to these great cultural institutions. Like I'm going to see the free symphony performances in the park. I'm going to, you know, musical theater. I'm going to these art exhibitions or galleries. That's not what's going on. They're sitting there saying there's so much to do. All they're doing is it's
going and getting blasted.
So it annoys the crap out of me that they're like, there's so much more opportunity. There's so much more culture.
I don't think that's
what anybody's doing.
But here's a good example, like LaGrange or whatever. This town either does two things: it shuts down at 9 p.m.
Not Danico's Pizzeria. That's going to be open 24 hours soon.
24 hours.
Is it 24 hours?
If it isn't, it's going to be.
Well, Power Play stays open to like 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, but I'm sorry. So that's one place you've got.
All right. Two places.
What I'm saying, in the city, there's most places stay open, but then also in LaGrange, I don't know if y'all know this, there's just like an overabundance of like children.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's pretty annoying.
This is totally the suburbs.
Teenagers. Which are worse than children.
Yeah. This is totally the suburbs where people are here till they're 18. They go away to college. Then they get an apartment and they don't come back.
They never come back.
Till they're married in like 35.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So they come back in like the 30s and get like an apartment.
There is this 15-year gap.
Yeah.
Where I think pretty much everybody who's in their 20s is in the store.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know about so much to do. Like I said, I'm rarely home anyway because I work so much, but I think a lot of it
you're
is
in
LaGrange
all the time anyway.
Exactly. So. It was financially and, you know, jobly, it makes more sense for me.
Jobly's not a word.
You know what? Just roll with it, guys. Just roll with
every
it.
Every podcast, Steven makes up 7 words.
I make up a word or I mispronounce a lot of words.
And then I jump all over it.
And then you jump down my throat about it. But anyway, so I think I grew up reading comic books and Peter Parker lives in the city, like the Matt Murdock lives, all the superheroes live in the city. So I feel like, oh, I should try to live in the city at one point. I think.
Yeah, but isn't the reality of the city quite different than the comic book version?
Yeah.
I mean, the only comic book, I'm not fighting
any supervillains.
I would hope the reality.
No. But I mean, I feel like everything's like probably shinier and bigger and in the comic book. Cause the only time I ever saw a representation, at least in a film version of a comic that I felt like was real city and it was Chicago, was in Wanted. Which otherwise is incredibly, you know, ridiculous, absurd.
Yeah, I remember that movie being crazy, but I don't really remember that. I didn't see
like
all
the
of it,
apartment so. He lives in feels like your friend's apartment and kind of a crappy part of city and the L's right there next to it. It had a feeling of like a real, even though the movie's totally insane and out there and it's fun, but
it has nothing to do with the comic at all.
I've never read the comic, like, there must have
been so many rewrites to that when I watched it, I was like, why did they bother to pay Mark Millar?
They could have called that movie.
Assassins.
So did you like the movie or
no?
I didn't mind it because it's anytime they do stuff like this, people like freak out. One of my favorite movies is Godzilla with Matthew Broderick. If they had called that movie like Giant Monster in New York.
You kind of look like Matthew Broderick. Have you heard that?
You kind of look like Godzilla.
Do I? Thanks.
Sort of like a fusion of the two.
No wonder
it's one of your favorite films.
I think people get really upset when you call something and that it's very different. So like that movie's a decent movie, but don't call it Godzilla because it doesn't look like Godzilla. People don't associate it with Godzilla. It's not actually a decent movie.
Yeah. So that's
I love that movie.
I just had to throw that
it
in
It also
there
had curving bullets, which I remember I went
and
to...
And Wanted, not Godzilla.
Okay, we're going to Wanted. Okay.
Yeah, I went to New York Comic Con where they had their director of Wanted before it came out and everybody's excited because they loved the book. And he's like, we are going to have curving bullets. You will love it. Every question that he was asked, he was like, curving bullets.
Because I think they were trying to like do like Matrix stuff, but they were like taking it to the next level. But it's like, you can't like arc your arm, fire a bullet, and have the bullet like curve around an object.
You can't even do that with a baseball, so how are you going to do
that? Yeah, exactly.
It's like physics. He takes curveball too literally.
They lost me where Morgan Freeman was like, I'm going to show you the... The Secret of All the Universe, and it's on my giant rug.
Is that what it
oh,
was?
Oh, yeah.
He's making a loom.
Oh, you know yeah. what I think, you know like, what I think the problem is?
Is in my
it was like weaving
project.
And stuff. Yeah.
Strangely, I own this film, and it's not like my necessarily my genre that I'm attracted to, but I think my I think the reason I love it is I love James McAvoy for some
reason. He's a good actor, and I love Morgan
but he's
Freeman
not really
too.
Good in that. I just, no, but I just.
Yeah, that's not a good movie. No one really does a
he's
good
He's really good
in
that
but I like
first
it.
Class. He's,
yeah,
he's
that,
great
and that is,
Professor
and that's what I was telling Steve the other day. I'm like, you know, I'm not a huge comic book person. I've had my time. I've read certain books.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. I was really into the X-Men cartoon in the 90s when I was a kid. But X-Men First Class is by far, in my opinion, the best superhero film I've ever seen.
Of all?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, there's I've never seen Dark Knight. I probably never will at this point because it annoys people that I haven't seen it, and that's kind of fun. That
you keep
still,
that going, yeah.
Yeah, they're still so annoyed by
it's
the
like
fact
Steven
that
it's like Steven not watching Doctor Who.
Yeah, it's more about like people get like really upset about it, so it's like, I'll keep this going for a little longer.
You're not missing much from what I've seen. I've seen like two seasons of David Tennant?
Tennant, yeah.
His version, you're not.
You know what? But Dave Redfield just texted me a picture of that girl, the new sidekick.
I've been saving them all on the DVR
have
for
you,
but
yeah,
we never watch
like,
them.
It's like constantly creeping in my subconscious that it's like, that beautiful girl, she's in this show, you should watch this show, her personality's probably as beautiful as she is. You know, I get like really like, I ruminate about this a lot. It really kind of
you're a weirdo.
I'm a weird guy.
So yeah, I think X-Men First Class is probably the best that I've seen.
Yeah,
I know Steve says Avengers, and I thought I hated the Avengers. Well, hate is a strong word, but I think the Avengers is terrible. Offense, Steve.
No, I like differentiating opinions. I really liked X-Men First Class because I think it had a smaller budget and there was less like expectation for that movie. And I think when that came out, we had Thor and Captain America came out that year, I think.
Yeah, they were all
and Thor, let me say, Thor I couldn't finish.
Thor, I thought
Thor
I had
ups
a
and
lot
downs.
Of expectations for
nah,
Thor.
I mean, and, well, I'm coming from a different angle than you guys too, but
that's
I think
true,
it's a crap. As a film, it's a terrible. There's so many things they did in that film as a film that drove me insane to the point where I'm like, I can't. Like
that
you
first
notice,
act is very tough to get through.
Yeah, well, and just like they always do what we call canted angles, where the camera's like diagonal. You know, it's not level.
Yeah.
And usually that communicates
like
unease,
something
or,
going on. Yeah.
Yeah. Some sort of unease or something, and I felt like in Thor. It was just like, hey,
let's tilt that camera.
Oh, damn,
degrees.
He forgot to level the tripod. Oh, you know what? It's creative. Let's keep it going.
Yeah, here's the thing I always thought, and maybe this is something I noticed now, and I don't know how many other people notice this. I'm sure thousands and hundreds of millions. This isn't a unique thing. But like, do you now then like watch a film and it's hard for you to like step back because you know so much about making films and doing films?
Not at all.
It's just like really
easy. I mean, unless there's like a super glaring issue. I have, first of all, I mean... Excuse me. I think it's been pretty much proven that multitasking is bullshit. You know, you can only invest so much of your attention into something. I mean, you can't really split it up, right? You can, but you're going to be half as good at the two things.
You only have so much attention.
You only have so much attention, and you can't change that. That's the way the brain works, right? So for me, when I watch a movie, if I want to watch it as a movie, then I watch it as a movie. And I can't think about the story and experience the story and also think about it on a technical level. My brain doesn't work that way because on a technical level, I got to get more analytical and I got to switch over to that and I got to be really focused.
Okay, that makes sense, yeah.
So I can either watch it as a film for the story or I can watch it as
like a
technical,
a learning
experience. And sometimes I'll watch a film twice for that reason. Some films are, it's like they're all style, so you immediately go over to technical because there's no story there anyway.
Right.
And some films are just so poorly made that you certainly do, like it just, I can't help but look at it technically. But I knew a guy that said he could do both. He could, you know, analyze every shot, analyze the lighting, analyze the performances, and enjoy the story.
That sounds like he's full of shit.
He is, so.
Yeah, yeah.
And he is in general, so it's, there's no... Yeah, so a lot of people ask that question, and people used to tell me that when I was really young. I remember one guy I used to work with, he's like, don't ever go to film school, which I never did anyway, but if you go to film school, you will never be able to enjoy film again because you're always going to be analyzing it. Now, you draw comics, right?
Yeah.
You write comics. Every time you read a comic, are you analyzing it?
No, I guess that's what I was thinking is that I do the same thing. I'll switch over where, like, if it's a new comic that I haven't read before, I'll read it, and I'll be like, oh, this is great. I'll be in the, it's more about the story and how cool the art is. And then later, if I'm drawing a comic, I'll be like, oh, how did this... Oh, I remember this awesome shot this guy did. Let me see how he did it and then try to do something similar or whatever. You know what I mean?
And the point of it, the point of any story is that it should be good enough that it completely consumes you, right? So
yeah, you know.
I think you go through a phase with that. I think that's a part of your development is analyzing everything, and eventually you get past it and you can enjoy it again. And I think when you're in that, when you're in film school or when you're in the middle of it, I remember when my second or third year of stand-up, all I did was break stuff down. And then it took another year or two for me to enjoy it again.
Yeah.
And
see, I never really went. I never really went.
You can analyze it and still enjoy it. Where you go, oh, this is done really well, and I see why it's working, and still enjoy it as an audience. But I think you have to go through that kind of analytical.
Because I remember being
in college.
It's
like your sophomore year.
I think what you're saying makes sense, but I feel like I never had that
never happened.
Experience. It's especially because I feel like a lot of my inspiration too doesn't necessarily come from. Strictly from like films.
Other films. Yeah, you're grabbing from all over the place.
Yeah, it's, you know, I could, like, I've actually thought lately, I'm like, man, I think I should start looking at comics more because they're basically like storyboards for films.
Absolutely.
And they might give me some interesting ideas for framing of shots or something like that that I haven't thought of. And then some of the things you do, I'm sure it's just physically impossible, especially in the budgets that I work on to even accomplish it.
Yeah, but I think there's enough interesting unless you kill shots people. You can do, you know?
Sorry?
Unless you kill enough.
Well, yeah.
Just throw them off buildings.
That's true.
But I did...
Look, he made that pose right before he hit the dumpster. Yeah.
I remember in college, there was a friend of mine who was going to Columbia, and he went to school for editing. And I remember just, like, we'd spend, like, hours talking about editing in a couple weeks to the point where I'm like, he just ruined movies for me. All I kept thinking was, he'd be like, oh, go see, you know, this movie, like, There Will Be Blood, and then pay attention to the editing. And I don't know anything about editing. I didn't go to school for editing. I never took a class. But then I remember, like, being taken out of movies for a while, not like months. It was like I saw like four movies, and it was like four movies I was like couldn't get past the editing. But now it's like it's a different part of your brain you're focusing on.
Or if like I'm really bored, I'll switch back and forth. Like I don't want to see this film, you know, maybe it's something that my fiance wants to see that I don't or whatever.
Yeah.
I'll just start flipping the switch and I'll be like, I'll analyze it for a while, then I'll try to get into the story again. That's not working out, so I'll just analyze it and go back and forth. But I never really had that period. I gotta be honest. I never really had that period where I couldn't enjoy things. Most of what I analyze is not like the films that I watch to watch a film to experience a story. I guess that's not where I'm really going for inspiration anyway.
Yeah.
I'm going to different places to get inspiration.
Yeah, because
specifically to get inspiration.
Yeah, because we talked about this before. I always feel like, you know, as far as with comics, like I need to be aware of like who's making the best comics that I can like find right now. And I always look at that because those are the guys I've got to compete with. Not that I'm on the level with those people. I'm competing with like every other Joker that's trying to break into comics, but I have to look at the guy who's the
best. If you're putting something out in the marketplace, you're competing with everyone else.
Exactly. Not that I've done that, but that's what I'm going to strive towards. It's like, who's the best guy that I consider in the business? I have to be as good as him or better to get a job. And so that's where I'm always
thinking. Rob Liefeld.
Absolutely.
So, that went over my head.
You know, there's going to be a lot of things I think that we're going to talk about. But I think
I'm just going to start throwing obscure film references
here. There you go. Or about manga or
flavors
something.
Of LaCroix you've never even dreamed of.
The stuff that blow your mind.
Yeah.
So I think, but it's the same thing. Like I'll watch movies and it'll be the same thing. Oh, there's a cool shot or there's a cool way to frame something. Or, you know, it comes from everything. You know, graphic design, like color schemes. You do kind of think... The most creative people I do know are always kind of reaching outside of like their world and what medium they're working in. You know, even if you're writing comedy, it's like, yeah, you write a lot from like life, I imagine, and stuff. But it's like you do have to kind of reach from kind of all over the place to kind of bring in material. You know, it's just one big like pot you're stirring.
Yeah, and you do have to watch the guys that are doing it really well to see what they're doing.
Yeah, I think how they do it.
Yeah, people that are doing stand-up that aren't paying attention to Louis C.K. or
I can never get into
Carlin or. Or Cosby, I think they're not going to be that good.
Yeah.
Because they're not learning.
But you know what? Here's the thing, too. I mean, I train. I always call it training. I guess you call it studying. Like, I train a lot. Like, I research my craft a lot.
Yeah.
Every day, I'm either watching tutorials, reading books on the subject, whatever it is. So I almost separate that, and I do that as its own exercise. And then when I go and watch a film or whatever, I'm watching a film.
You're just, it's entertaining.
So it's kind of like if there was a bunch of books and, you know, if Louis C.K. was putting out tutorials on this is how you best, you know, make this gesture or something while you're telling this joke, you know, that would be its own experience that you have to decide. It's like going to class. That's your class. And then your films and stuff for your entertainment are there your, you know, how you engage with
You kind of always have to be working like somehow. Like, you know, it's the same thing as I'll read a comic and enjoy it, but then I've got, you know, six different books at home sitting next to the John. That's all. This is how you draw comics. This is this guy's version of drawing comics. This is a interview.
But see,
with,
people don't spend time with that. So you have to be self-motivated.
Yeah.
And I think people completely reject self-motivation. They're like, everyone's like, they say this in film and they probably say this about artists and writers too. You want to be better at it, go and do it. Pick up camera, go out there and shoot.
Yeah.
I agree with that, but you also have to take some time to understand the mechanisms of what you're doing. You could go and you could get a lucky shot, or you could get a fuck up that maybe you learn from.
Right.
But you still have to understand the mechanisms that make it work in the first
place.
Yeah,
I mean, the best people
and people
are...
people completely disregard that, I feel like. Or they go to school and they're like, okay, now school's done, so I'm just going to do it. Well, no, like, it's cliche as it is, you know, it's... And learning is endless.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can't just keep drawing. You can't just keep drawing. Sooner or later, you need to do some research and some training and some education into, you know, techniques that you never
and
considered
that's the,
how to
that's
do this.
The hope for anyone who's in a creative field is that you're constantly getting better. You know, you don't want to enter a field at 22 and like, this is what I do. And then you look back and you're 52 and you're like, I've been doing the same thing for 30 years.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I think it's not enough to just do it. And I think everybody's advice is always do it. Draw. Paint. Right.
Yeah, it's the easiest
I think you actually,
part of it. Yeah.
That's a huge part of it. But I think a huge part of it, too, is then some of the other time you're actually cracking open the books or looking, you know, the internet is a godsend. You can learn how to do anything because of the internet. And, you know, going online and figuring out, you know, how do I draw a submarine, or how do I work in this medium of, you know, watercolors or whatever it is? Just doing it often isn't enough. And you could probably save yourself some time, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, my nephew asked, he's trying to draw, I don't know, he's like 14 or 12 or 9 or something, I don't know. I'm a terrible uncle.
What's
his
name?
Big gap.
His name's Patrick.
Oh, good. That was on the first try?
Yeah, well, there's three of them, so it's, you know, I got it right. That's good. And, well, they all draw, but he's the one who's like, really, like, I want to draw, and that's the thing I always tell him is, well, just keep drawing, because that was the thing when I was a kid is, you know, my older brother always drew better than I did, so I just stopped drawing for years, and then I lost a lot of where I was going, and then it took me a lot. I did go to school for art and all this other stuff. I had to get like re-educated, and then there was a period, like, you know, Craig was saying, is like, you get out of school and you're just like, all right, I'm gonna go do this for a living, and then that doesn't happen, and then you just stop. And there was years after school I wasn't drawing, to the point where when I started the comic, those pages look like shit. And then it's, you finally get a lot of headway, you get a lot of bad pages out of your system, and a different way of like thinking, and you know, like you said, you read books about it, and I had to like re-educate myself how to draw, and a lot of that stuff finally came back to me, but it took a minute. And it's, you know, now I'm redrawing half the book because it doesn't line up with the later half of the book that's drawn at a higher quality than, you know, the original stuff I kind of put
and
out.
That's why they always say, especially about film, that films aren't finished, they're abandoned, because you could spend the rest of your life redrawing it.
Yeah,
because every drawing you're getting a little bit better
every time.
So which also means that every past drawing is going to seem a little worse,
right?
So you have to get to a point where it's like, all right, I can let this go, and do another one that's even better.
Exactly.
And that's what I always liked about the monthly schedule of comics. I loved that it was so fast, and that's not quite how they're produced anymore, because they have set story arcs and teams come
and nobody's
go
drawing
so quickly.
A book a month anymore, which
nobody
is terrible.
But it used to be you just hit it every day,
just keep going.
And if it didn't come out right, well, it was published that way.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't have the time to look back, so you just had to make sure that everything you did was better than the thing you did yesterday.
So how many books would like an artist draw in a month? Just one?
Pretty much everyone.
Not even one anymore.
Right now, you're
back in the day, I guess.
Back in the day,
Kirby used to draw like 4 or 5, and then he finally like settled on 3 by the end of Marvel.
I mean, how much can you make in a month drawing a single book?
Depends on your rate. It's
depends
freelance
on who
rate.
For as far as I know, I heard John Cassaday is probably in the top tier of Marvel artists right now.
Yeah.
And I heard, I don't know if this is true or not, he's making $1,000 a page.
Wow.
And that's 22-page comic books, that's $22,000 a month.
But he's a guy that doesn't draw monthlies.
Exactly. Now, here's the thing is, it's like
he doesn't need to.
Yeah. He can't.
And his
can't.
Pages are so beautiful, you can tell. Because to do a monthly, you got to be putting out a page a day. And when you look at somebody like John Cassaday's pages, they take longer than a day.
And he's inking himself, too. So it's like you draw, you ink, and then he hands it off to a digital colorist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like I said, you're supposed to be able to do a book a month. Ramita's probably the closest to doing 2 or 3 books a month. The guy who drew Kick-Ass. He's like a co-creator.
Yeah.
And then
he's
Stuart Amonin's the other one.
But he's a guy that got into the industry in his 20s in the late 70s. And he's never missed a month.
Yeah.
So
he's
such
always
an efficient
got a book
machine.
Out.
But he's always interesting, too. He's not just churning out the same stuff over and over again. He's constantly looking for new angles to do things,
new ways
to shape things. And his style really evolved heavily between the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
But he's one of the few guys. Mark Bagley is another guy that can draw fast. But there's not a lot of guys that can do that.
Yeah, but like I said, the monthly schedule is something where it's, you know, you're supposed to 22 pages a month isn't bad. Mm-hmm. That's a page a day. I mean, John Byrne was doing 3 pages a day when he was writing Fantastic Four, and he was writing, drawing, and I don't know, was he inking that?
I think he was inking halfway through the run. He had
and
Terry Austin.
He's crazy because, and I don't know how anyone else draws comics, but I have to lay out the whole page separately. As far as I know, this is how most people do it. They lay out the page. Get all the different angles, fast thumbnails, and then they usually light box their thumbnails onto the board, and then they finish all the drawing. John Byrne would just sit down at the desk, get the board, start in one corner, finish it the next.
That's what Kirby would do.
Yeah. And
Kirby would design things as he drew them. He was like, oh, we need a machine here, and he would just draw whatever.
And that's probably just rote, like doing it so many times, it's muscle memory.
At that point,
they've been doing it for decades of them.
Yeah, and I mean, this is, as far as Kirby's known, this is a guy pretty much after Milton Kniff, this guy invented the genre. This guy invented superhero comics in like the 40s, and then reinvented them in the 60s, and then
everyone's still doing what he did.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he was like the Orson Welles of comics.
Yeah.
I feel like you should be able to do a page a day.
Yeah.
Even if you have to sketch it out first and everything. I mean, if you look at like, okay, a guy in an office works 8 hours a day. Like,
exactly.
If you sit down for 8 hours and work on this, you should be able to do a page a day.
You know, I'm working so much time at the store, but two weeks ago, I had 3 days off. No bullshit with Dave. I didn't have to come and cover any shift at the store. Me and Carm were doing anything. I got 3 pages done in a week. So that was a page every day, which is awesome. That never happens. So it's like, this is something where if this was my full-time gig, page a day, I can knock that out.
It's not a 9-to-5, 5-day-a-week job.
Yeah.
So when you get to the point where you need the income from somewhere else, it gets harder and harder.
Right. And then to keep doing that.
Yeah, like you said, you were able to do a page a day when you didn't have anything else to do.
Right. And that's not making any, you know, money. I've got student loan debt, credit card debt, I have rent to pay.
See, I've never understood why you didn't just draw while you were in the store. Is it too distracting?
We've tried it. Yeah, it's the same thing with trying to paint the windows in the store. I was like, oh, I'll paint the windows in the store and I'll get them done and we'll change them every 6 months.
Right.
And then I kept having to stop and talk to customers or whatever. Well,
There's constant interruptions.
Yeah, I know. I understand.
A lot of what we do at the store is it's not just, and this is deliberately, we set this up deliberately, isn't just give me money and I'll give you comics.
You're building relationships.
It's a bar. You know what I mean? It's like people are coming for the conversation as much as they are for anything else. They come to hang out. So I spent a lot of time just talking to somebody, and we tried. When the first 6 months we were open, I brought all my art crap there, I had all my pencils and stuff, and I would try drawing, and I couldn't get into any kind of like.
No, it makes total. Yeah. You know it makes total sense.
Yeah, and that's what everyone says. Oh, but it's like there's never, you know, at the most I'll have an hour of uninterrupted work time, but then it's like, well, during that hour when it's uninterrupted, now I've got to do the reorder, I've got to face the shelves or fold t-shirts. It's like there's always something to do at the at the shop.
All the glamorous stuff.
Yeah, the non-glamorous stuff, you know. But yeah, I think what is interesting is I think being your own, like you got your own company with John, you know, you guys got your own bosses, you have to set your own hours, you have to constantly line up work and different
projects. It is still like freelancing though. I mean, you're constantly marketing yourself to try to get clients.
Yep.
And some months you land 5 jobs, some months you land 3, some months you land 8, some months.
It's never consistency, I think.
Yeah, it's really no different than when I was freelancing, because I started out as a freelance videographer, I guess you would call it. And in a way, it's not any different. In a way, it's like harder and scarier, because now you're responsible for employees and you're responsible for, you know, I feel you're responsible for the success of many people, your employees, your freelancers, your household, your partner. It's kind of like now it's not just you,
right?
A guy with a camera and a computer, and you're making, you know, little videos for people to make money so you can do your own thing. It's like now you've got the weight of all these different lives on your shoulder.
Yeah.
Maybe I just over dramatize
it. No, but I think there is something to that. I mean, the store was a lot easier for me to run when it was easier is a relative term. It was a lot less I thought about when it was just me or just Carm. Now I watch an obscene amount of security footage. You know what I mean? It's just like I'm a very
But you enjoy that.
It's entertaining sometimes. Stu is awesome for the store.
I've seen some crazy stuff on security cams too. I worked at a restaurant when I was freelancing. I'd work at a restaurant at night.
Yeah.
And you would see some, they had a bar in the restaurant, and you would see some crazy stuff. One of my favorites was a guy was sitting at the bar, and this is when you could still smoke in bars. And he went to light up a cigar. And I don't know if he's wearing like an Angora sweater or something, but he just bursts into flames at the bar.
And, that's awesome.
And it was just like, you know, some middle-aged, overweight guy with a cigar and like this furry sweater on. And he just tears it off, throws it on the floor of the bar, stomps it out. He's shaking because he's so... And then they
the adrenaline, he's just like,
the adrenaline.
Ah.
So you think like your night's done. Well, management comes in with a t-shirt, gives it to him, and he just sits right back down, pulls up a new drink and goes for it. Security footage can be fun.
Is it the fact that we're anxious that we go into the creative atmosphere, mm-hmm. which is full of instability, which is full of anxiety, which is full of self-judgment? It seems to be this atmosphere that would make well-reasoned people anxious. And yet people that are already anxious are
go into this
yeah. which is filled with more anxiety than most professions. Are we drawn to it? Is it just...
I don't know. I would love to live a life free of anxiety or as much as possible. I think I deal with it way too much.
I would too. I just don't know how to do it.
Ask Stephen Brown. He's free of anxiety.
My whole thing is just like, look, every problem, I really do believe that every problem has a solution, and there's nothing that can ever come up personally in my life or professionally that I can't figure out a way. And that way might not be awesome.
What about the problem of, you were talking about end of the world, like a black hole appearing and sucking the earth in?
Well,
what's
that's
the solution?
There's no
what's the solution?
The solution
that's a problem.
Is that's inevitable.
That's it's a big problem.
That, to me, that's the solution. The solution is you go with it.
The solution is acceptance.
Yeah, and that's never going to happen.
And that's whenever I've been faced with a major crisis that I can't get out of, I'm not worried at all. What I'm always worried about is that I'm the one who's fucking everything up.
I'm always worried
everybody's
about
counting on me, and I'm going to screw it up, and then I'm going to get yelled at.
Yeah, I think you're a self-deprecator.
The earth getting sucked into a black hole, that's not my fault.
Yeah, that's not going to be. Then no one's going to say, damn you, John Clark, and your black hole shenanigans.
I will try to figure out a way to make it my fault.
Right.
You're like, well, I should have been a scientist.
I should have known.
So it sounds like we all have different neuroses here.
Yeah,
because yeah,
so.
I can't relate to either. I don't relate to that thought either. I think most of my anxiety is anticipation. I'm always anticipating, like, is this gonna go wrong? Is this gonna happen? Am I gonna feel this way? You know, am I going to just weird stuff?
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It could be like, am I going to? Okay, I gotta go to do this thing. I gotta go. What if I throw up in the middle of it?
Yeah, never occur to me in a million years.
Oh, that always occurs to me. You know what? There's always a voice in my head whenever I'm in a pressure filled situation of like, what's the worst thing I could do? Like if I go into a client presentation and I'm like, what if I just stood up and punched that woman right in the face?
What would happen? Like,
have you ever
would be the repercussions? And I don't do it because I know there's no good repercussions.
None.
They
have
don't
you guys?
I like to cut you a jib.
I might just be, there might be something mentally not right about me, but do you ever get the urge to do things like out of nowhere that you would never want to do?
All the time.
Like when I'm on a high, like on the roof of a building and I go and I'm looking off the edge, there's always that split second where I feel like, I almost feel like I'm just going to jump off this building.
I don't think I ever take it. I think, I don't know if I ever take that too seriously. Like, I'll never think, like, I'm like, oh, what would happen if I jump? But I'll never think, like, oh, I'm going to fucking jump.
I think that's a control thing. I think it's like, I know I shouldn't jump, but I can. I think there's a satisfaction in going, yeah, I have the power to do
this.
I
can do this.
I've never
thought
of it that
way. Even though everybody says, don't do it, I could do it.
You've never thought of it that way?
I've never thought of it. Because it's kind of like you were saying, John, going into like a presentation with a client. Because there's plenty of times I've been in a meeting with clients and I'm like, what if I just said this?
Yeah.
And it's something totally inappropriate.
Yeah, but it would totally shift the whole meeting.
Yeah, towards us not getting the job. But
yeah,
I just feel like I have these little moments where it is sort of like, and I guess I haven't analyzed it the same way you guys have, but it is sort of like what I could literally jump off this building right now. I could, you know, say this thing that was just totally horribly inappropriate.
I'm not always sure what I want to do with my life, but I know for sure what I don't want it to look like. And what I don't want it to look like is like my dad did. My dad worked for a phone company, Ameritech, AT&T, all those guys. And that's all he did was like 9 to 5 every day. And it's like the same thing every day. It's like, and my dad is a good problem solver. So he was like tech support. So he's really good at what he was doing. But that's not something where it's like, I couldn't do this. And it's already like driving me a little nuts at the store is doing the same thing like every day. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little different because it's I'm reading comic books and watching cartoons. You know, so it's like a Saturday.
When will the comic books and cartoons end?
Right. You know, it's like
I can't take this free candy in front of me. So let's move from video startup companies to software startup companies and talk to Glenn Farrington.
Glenn is a screenwriter in L.A. Right now he's working on Kickin' It for Disney XD. But when he decided to do a graphic novel, he couldn't find a software writing program that worked for the medium. So he decided to create one. So let's talk to Glenn and learn about comics writing.
My passion ever since I was a kid is comic books. I mean, I started with Silver Surfer and Spider-Man, and my dad was always a military guy, so fighting Army, fighting Marines, Sergeant Rock, that type of thing. But it's always carried, has been a through line throughout my life. And when I started seeing the independent scene really start to take over, well, not take over, but really take off in this past decade, I thought, well, here's a way I can enter. And I pitched to a gentleman named Larry Young from AIT Planet LAR up in San Francisco. Because I had Astronauts in Trouble, the book they did with Charlie Adler.
Charlie Adler, who's been doing Walking Dead.
Right, right.
And yeah, I remember he used to do the X-Files comic back in the 90s.
That's right. Charlie's been doing it for a while, but I mean, Walking Dead's really what's given him his notoriety. But Larry's the one who gave him his first break with Astronauts in Trouble. And I knew that Larry had a good eye for things that would work in the marketplace. When I pitched him the idea of this graphic novel, he said, absolutely, we need to do it. And so I immediately was like, all right, I'm going to write it. And I started looking at all the comic book scripts people had. And I was like, okay, well, what uses this? And at the time, I was using Movie Magic and Final Draft, depending upon what show I was working on. And they had comic book templates, which were great, but they still didn't, for me, fulfill all the needs that was necessary, especially when it came to sound effects, if you want to put a word, if you want to put the bubbles in differently, or how you full-page splashes. There were just a lot of things that I had to also add myself, and I wasn't doing it automatically. It kept taking me out of rhythm of writing. Mm-hmm. So I got frustrated, and I called Larry. I said, there's got to be a software out there. This is going back 4 years ago. I said, there's got to be a software out there that does the needs for a comic book writer, that does for screenplays. He said, there is none, primarily because everybody writes it differently.
Right,
I said, well, which is great, but you can have a software that allows the freedom for everybody who can write it differently, have all these separate templates, or be able to put yours in the first time and it stays set that way.
Right. That was one of the first things I thought when you talked about the software was, I think 10 years ago this might not have been possible because some people were writing plot and then script, some people were writing full script. And I think it's really when Quesada took over Marvel and said, this is it, we're all writing full script.
Right.
That I think we were starting to have a templated version. Because if you look back at some of the trade paperbacks of, say, Watchmen or Sandman,
right,
you read Neil Gaiman's and Alan Moore's scripts, they don't look anything alike.
No. And granted, you know, Joe really started setting the precedent in Dark Horse, you know, saying, hey, this is the template we want for submissions. So that really started moving things in that direction. But again, you know, you're left with, if you wanted to use that template, let's use Dark Horse as an example, you had to go to Final Draft.
Right.
And you had to spend $259 for a template for your use. And the thing that always bothered me, I'm spending all this money on these screenplay softwares that are saying, oh yeah, we got a little something for you too. I didn't want a bone. I want something that was just for what I wanted, what I needed, and more importantly, to be able to collaborate with the colorist and letterer and the artist.
Right, so let's get into details about how does this differ from, say, a template and Final Draft? Obviously, you're building from the ground up, and
right,
you're saying collaboration is key. So how are you making that work?
Well, we're starting with an engine that is a basic engine that's almost very similar to a Final Draft or a word processor. We had to have the actual elements in it, allowed you for dictionary, be able to tab, enter, so forth, so on. And when I first had this in mind, the direction to go forward, I wanted to call my buddy Steve Sashin that put Scriptware out on the market out here, which was the first screenwriting software, by the way. It predates Final Draft. It was actually far better. But
kind of like Corel Word Perfect back in the 90s.
Yeah.
Don't you miss Corel? I love Corel.
Yeah, you know, you and I always must talk about that, but yeah.
Let's do a whole podcast about Corel.
So anyway, I called him up and I told him my idea, and he said, because I knew that he had done so much work on something similar, he would be able to give me some tips. And I said, would I be able to incorporate, for example, a lot of guys I know like putting graphics within their script, whether it's a drawing or be able to put a notation in there about something to tell the artist or the colorist? And he said, yeah, we'd be able to put all that in. I said, we sounds great. Would you want to do this with me? He said, absolutely. Because what I bring to the table is having already done this with the software. So that eliminates your needs for wondering can or what we can. And, you know, we assembled a little bit larger programming team than he had for Scriptware because we had some basic other needs. Because one of the things that I absolutely wanted, the thing that really frustrates me is when I get the work back from the colorist, I bring it up not the colorist, the artist. I bring it up on my screen, and I gotta fumble through my actually printed script to go to see that everything's kind of how I want it, and you know, or at least staying on story, because the one thing that I'm fully behind is allowing the artist freedom. I consider artists like directors. You know, I give them the script, and they kind of figure out how they like to visually portray it. I'm not one of those guys that has to stick to the words on the page. As long as you're on story, I'm good with that. For example, Philbach Brothers, the work I'm doing with them, I sent them a script where the most was 5 to 6 panels on a page, and they came back with an average of 10 to 16 panels per page. Mm-hmm. You know, something that would normally freak you out, but as a writer, but boy, they were able to figure out these great concepts of still telling the same story by showing bits and pieces, so I was more than happy. Sorry, getting a little off topic. So I had the script in my hand. I was always fumbling through it. So I wanted a viewer. So when the artist gave me back pages, I could have a viewer would also pull up on one side his artwork and right next to it the page that I had written for that piece of artwork. So I could just look on the screen and be able to notate back to him if I see any differences or changes in my script all in one spot. I don't have to fumble around. That makes it a lot quicker, much easier. And so that was important to me. And working with letterers, I know they need to have stuff that's in Word or an RTF file. So it was huge for me to make sure that everything that we save gives you the ability to not only save as a PDF or the file that's going to be the regular Comics Writer file, but also an RTF and a Word file.
As you said, being able to show the art right in there.
Right.
So you're uploading JPEGs into the document?
When a file is exported, yeah, you can have attachments within the document. So if you save it as a PDF, they're already in there.
Oh, that's fascinating, because I've always hear about people like Grant Morrison who end up drawing character designs and doing layouts on thumbnails. So
right.
To be able to integrate that, which is something that you don't think is standard.
It's actually what we got back from a few of the working pros. And they, matter of fact, just like you said, they're used to doing little drawings on the paper that they send out with their work as well. I said, wouldn't it be great if we could integrate that within our software and giving you the option of sending it out as a file that just has the text or with any of the added graphics? Because I know, like, even for me, when I sent something to Steve Bryant in Chicago, actually, we're doing a book series together. And I wanted him to have a perfect idea of what I had in mind. And I had to attach an email with the separate photo and the script. And if I had Comics Write, it would all have been one file and a PDF that it went straight out to him and it had everything that he needed to see.
Wow. So how's the development going?
It's actually going pretty good, but it's interesting. It's going to be a continual beta until we get it out because we're constantly getting feedback from working pros that are getting to hear about it. I mean, we've been lucky. We've got a few good articles online and a little bored. We've been quietly talking to guys, but of course, you know, there's nothing quiet in this world, in the comic book world. So I get emails saying, hey, we heard you're working on this. I have some ideas. And so we're constantly changing. So we're like, you know what? That's one great thing about Kickstarter, because once that world comes out, we'll have far more information coming back in from people. And we're allowing ourselves a few months on the beta program going out to invited people. And we might also make that a part of the Kickstarter, like early on backers might be involved in the beta program as well.
Right. So,
it's a constant growing product. I know for a fact things that we thought were dead in stone for what we're going to do now are going to change. I know all the input that we're going to get, there's going to be things we haven't even thought of.
Right. So let's talk about the Kickstarter. It kicks off, is it June 24th?
The 25th. Isn't that Tuesday? The 25th?
That's a Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah. It's either going to be the 25th or the 26th. We found out that it might take a little bit. Kickstarter's got all these time frames once you put something into when they can show it. We had to make some changes. So it's either going to be that Tuesday or Wednesday, either the 25th or the 26th.
And what's your goal?
It's not something that's crazy. We're not asking like 100,000 or 200. And we're not like, you know, this is just kind of the final funding and also to get people involved with it. So it's hopefully it'll be a reachable goal.
Right. So it's just that last push.
Right, right. We're not, no. If we tried to fund this whole thing, I wouldn't even felt comfortable bringing it to Kickstarter. It would have been asking for way too much money. I would never do that to people.
Now, well, now, as you say, since we're in the final push with this Kickstarter, how long has this been in development?
3 years. Wow. actual development with the software, under a year. But conceptually, constant going back and forth, the drawings between Larry Young and I and discussions with other pro writers. I wanted to make sure that, A, there was a need. I felt there was a need, but I wanted to make sure there was a need. And now I fully understand there absolutely is. Because it really, the software, granted, you know, it's not fully for everybody who's already writing professionally. You know, it's because they're kind of, some of these guys are set in their ways. I would say about 40% of these guys aren't going to switch over. I mean, it's just the life. Plus, a lot of these guys still write in the Marvel way. And I was talking to another writer the other day who doesn't even write a script. You know, they start with the artwork and then work backwards, which is going back to how it used to be done, which is fine. That works too. But about 60% are going to find this is a really great tool. But I'm really reaching out to the new people, people that want, the creatives out there that go, you know what? I'm watching comic books being turned into TV shows. I'm looking at the billions made now in movies from comic books. I think I'm creative enough to come up with something like that. Now, here's an entry point, and I'm giving you the software to make it easy for you.
Right. And as you said, it's going to be more affordable,
yes,
as you're saying in press release, because as we know with Final Draft, the
$250.
Yeah, the cheapest you can find it is about $180 on Amazon.
And that a lot of times isn't there. And if you're a student, you can get a good price, but you're still talking upwards of $150, $160.
Yeah, and I'm at the point now where I transitioned from PC to Mac a few years ago, and I have an old edition of Final Draft, but I have to buy it all over again to do it. And honestly, it's put some projects on hold. I'm like, well, maybe I could just keep writing notes on this.
Wow, they made you buy it all over again?
They do. It's you can't really transfer it. And as I said, my edition goes back to like Windows XP.
Right.
So it's definitely not going to work with Lion or Mountain Lion.
I really thought they had the Mac and PC version. I'm surprised they made you buy it again. Anyway.
Yeah, not sorry, my original version. But well, what's the price you're looking to set?
We're looking at under 100. Right now we're looking at under 100.
That's fantastic.
And we're
going
to announce the price at Kickstarter. If I were to guess, I would say probably $99, just to say it's safe because we're under 100.
Right.
But, you know, if I could do lower than that, I'd like to. It really depends on what the programming costs wind up being at the end.
Right. And are you thinking of producing a disc for this, or is it going to be straight
download?
Oh,
no. That's the one thing I want to stay away from. Don't want any shipping.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to allow it to be downloaded from our website. But here's the great thing, because I'm a pull guy. Every Wednesday, I'm there picking up my books.
Right.
Comic book stores are finally getting a little bit of a resurgence, and I want to be a part of what helps them work. So what we're doing is we're allowing every comic book store that has a website presence currently to be able to distribute our project on the website. Very similar to the model that Comixology is using, where you just click on for digital comics.
Yeah, it's almost like a banner, like an Amazon.
Right, or even a little graphic sometimes they have. When you click through and you buy the comics, a piece of every comic goes back to that comic book store. So what I'm allowing is every comic book store, not just in the United States, but in the world, to be able to be distributors of comics writer. And because of the higher price point, they get a much larger profit off of every sale.
Wow. Well, that's fantastic. And you said the Kickstarter will start on June 25th. Does it run a week?
It'll run 30 days.
Okay, 30 days. And then When are you hoping to release the final software?
This winter.
Oh, great.
This winter. Where we want to get the beta out like a few months afterwards. I mean, that's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, granted, with the program, when it comes to software, time frames can always change. We'd like to get it out by this winter. But even if we get it out by January, I'd be very happy because that's still cold in winter.
Yeah, really. How many people need script writing software for Christmas?
Well, we're hoping next year quite a bit.
Here you go, Timmy. Get to work.
Well, one thing that brings up an interesting point, because the one thing we'd like to do that we haven't really talked about yet is that I'm finding out more and more, especially from the feedback we've gotten out of the clear blue from people that have heard about Comics Writer, that there's actually writing programs, comic book writing programs, in quite a few universities and educational facilities all over the country, and probably the world for that matter. I haven't really looked into it more than I should have, but there's enough of feedback coming from the United States that I went, you know what? I'd like to get this software into their hands. And frankly, I don't want to charge them. I'd rather give them the software. So if they're going to be teaching a class on comic book writing, I want to give them the tool that'll make it so much easier so they can concentrate on the story and how to outline. And which, by the way, Comics Writer will also allow you to be able to outline. Your comic book before you start writing, which is very, very important. Outline.
Right. So it's almost like there's a plotting function built into
yes.
the software. So you can do plot and script. Because as you said, if people writing the Marvel method, it seems like there's no reason they can't use the software if they use the plotting tool and then go back and and just add in dialogue for a script.
Absolutely correct. And that's the one thing that we've always known. But a lot of times when you talk to people who write the Marvel way, it's trying to discuss with the wall. So we would prefer that the software goes out and they come to realize, oh, wow, I can use this too. Rather than me going, hey, you can use this. Oh, you know, I'd rather that the software speaks for itself.
Right. So how can we find the Kickstarter and how can we keep up with the progress of Comics Writer?
Well, one thing that I will do is hopefully through Kickstarter, they'll be able to help us too with that. Well, hopefully we'll do well enough where they'll start promoting it too. Can't always count on that. We're looking forward to all the comic book stores in the world that are helping us out with distribution to also get the word out through their Twitter and Facebook accounts. We've contacted, we'll be contacting the rest, but hopefully that'll be a component of it. Gentlemen like yourself and podcasts and blogs, we're sending out more information that's going to give you the ability to, within a couple clicks, share it on your Facebook account and share it on your Twitter account so you don't have to write it in yourself. So that way we're helping you help us.
Right. And does the software have a Twitter account or a Facebook page? Or
Yes, the Twitter account is Comics Writer. It's at Comics Writer. And we have a Facebook page too, Comics Writer, which I think is... What does that go? Facebook.com/comicswriter?
Yeah, just go on Facebook and type Comics Writer. It's comics with an X.
Right.
Yeah.
COMIXWRITER. Comics Writer.
Yes. So everything that's done will be written by Robert Crumb.
Well, you know, you just made me think of an interesting point. I'm having a discussion with Richard Starkings this week because I was looking back to people that I really felt was able to take the comic world and really bring out the digital side of it. And like, for example, John Rogers and Mark Waid is doing a Thrill Bent. Richard Starkings done for letterers, you know, being able to put all these fonts and make their lives easier.
Right.
So I'm really looking forward to our conversation because I know he's going to have some great advice about what, not only just directions to take with his software, but understanding how it will fit in the comic book world itself.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week.
This week I don't have anything specific, but what I do have is
you said you were gonna go first.
No, I got first. I got something. I'm just saying I didn't
really excited. My about
life. You're like, I'll go first, and then immediately you're like, I got nothing.
No, I got something. What I'm saying is I don't have nothing really awesome happened this week until this morning. We were at breakfast with my dad and a couple other people, and my dad gave me the origin of the word shit. This is like, why do we use this word? Where did it come from?
So is I guess, that explicit tag?
Well, yeah. That's how we put it on. So in olden times, when the world was like a lot more interesting and like pirates were running around doing cool stuff and you could have like adventures, they used to transport like manure and all this other crap, like literally, on like a boat, right? Well, they used to pack it in like a box. And I guess a lot of times like it wasn't really packed really well and there'd be like flooding and stuff and then... There were so many like fumes and stuff, like guys would go out there to like light a pipe or something and then like the fucking barge would explode. Like, so they had to start keeping the stuff dry. So what they did was they started labeling all the containers with the words stow high in transit. SHIT. Shit.
There was a British show that I've been watching. Is that cool? Can we?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's called Life on Mars. Have you guys heard about
this?
I've heard of it. Didn't the U.S. do a version of it? That
I guess they did some remake with Harvey Keitel and one of the guys from Sopranos. Yeah. But so no interest because it's a very British story anyways. But it's a cop who gets in an accident in modern days, goes into a coma, and he wakes up in 1973. And his cover sort of that he's like transferred from a different precinct, so he's still a cop, but when he walks through the doors, they're like, oh, you just transferred from Hyde or whatever, you know, and he's trying to navigate the 70s, like not by the book cop world, as well as try to figure out like, okay, am I dead? Am I in a coma?
Yeah.
And this is what I'm living. Did I go back in time? Like what's, so he's trying to figure out his own shit as well
there
as,
and now we know what that means.
Yeah. Now we know where that came from.
But I've been rewatching all the old Marx Brothers movies. I have all the DVDs of those, and every one of them, especially the earlier stuff that Universal put out, like Duck Soup, Horse Feathers, Monkey Business, all those are still great.
Why are they all animal?
I don't
relate.
Know.
Like the names are all animal based.
The first one's called The Coconuts, and then after that, like Night at the Opera. So they're not all called that. But you're right.
There's a fair amount of animal names. You just listed like half the animal.
It's kind of like Will Ferrell sport movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, why does he keep making movies about sports guys?
Yeah, it's weird.
You know what? Probably the first one made money. If they were like, our animals. There's no animals in any of them.
Right. That's weird.
It's just like, it's called Monkey Business, and like, it's Chico and Harpo hiding in a barrel. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Not In My Book. Definitely check out the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page and leave us a comment on iTunes if you're listening to us through there.
I'm just kidding. You can go to motionsource.net is our professional page if you want to hire us to do some work for you.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!